Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesarino back here with one of our Survivor deep dives. The story so far all about David Wright. Very excited to talk about David Wright's return to Survivor for Survivor 38. We're going to be talking with our good friend Shannon Gates on the podcast, and we will bring her in just a moment. But first, let me say hello to the first lady of podcasting and David Wright fan as well, Nicole Cesarino. Nicole, how are you?
Number one David Wright fan.
Number one David Wright. Yes. And you're talking about the baseball player?
Yeah, obviously, right? That's who we're talking about.
David Wright, the survivor. David Wright, the survivor, okay, is coming back.
Number two David Wright fans.
For the edge of extinction. And we're very excited to talk about that here today. Of course, I know Nicole had just got done listening to our full deep dive talking about Kelly Wentworth.
It was so good.
Which was posted on late Sunday night, Monday morning with Liana Boris. We went through the whole thing. Nicole had so many questions that she was asking me all day today about Kelly Wentworth.
Yes. And this is not a complete fabrication.
Yes. And mostly questions about Dale Wentworth. She still has a lot of questions about
Farm Guy 69 is my BFF.
Okay. All right. We have more deep dives coming on this week as we are now officially into the Survivor 38 preseason. But before we get to talking about David Wright, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And Nicole is here to help us talk about Scentbird. With Scentbird, now there's a way to be able to try out all the different colognes or perfumes that you would like, whether it's Versace, Gucci, Dolce & Gabbana. Scentbird keeps you smelling great month after month. Nicole, you've had the chance to try out Scentbird. What has your experience been like?
So far, so good. I'm trying to find my signature scent because I'm tired of my signature scent being Dirty Toddler.
Yes. Okay. So you're working on that.
Yes. I'm tired of smelling like applesauce and Goldfish crackers.
I mean, I think you pull it off, but I can understand why you might want to get in on this great deal from Scentbird, because right now you can get 50% off your first month. That's only $7.50 for your first fragrance. They will send you a month supply. Every month you get to try out whatever you want. Scentbird is a luxury fragrance subscription service where you can mix up your cologne or your perfume routine. It's a way for you to discover new colognes or perfumes without buying the entire bottle. Scentbird has more than 450 designer brands for you to choose a cologne or a perfume from each month. Try the brands that you want. It's the real deal. Gucci, Tom Ford, Kenneth Cole, Burberry, Prada, and more. Choose the cologne that you want to try. They send you 30-day supply. That's 120 sprays, enough to apply more than four times daily for the month. And if you're not sure what you're looking for, sort colognes and perfumes by brand, occasion, season, style, and more. You can check out the user ratings on any fragrance or take Scentbird's True Scent Quiz to discover more personalized recommendations. Nicole, I think I need to figure out my personalized scent.
Goldfish crackers.
I don't think they have that one.
No, I'm so fancy now. I'm wearing Tom Ford.
Whoa.
Yes.
Who's that guy?
He's on me.
Hey. We've got a great offer for our listeners. Again, 50% off for your first month today. That's $7.50 for your first fragrance. Go to scentbird.com/Rob and use the code Rob for 50% off your first month. That's scentbird.com/Rob to try out your first cologne or perfume for just $7.50. Sign on.
That's a really good deal.
Amazing, Nicole.
Yeah. I am smelling amazing.
Okay. Thank you so much. I'll let you get back to your goldfish crackers.
Please don't.
Okay. All right, everybody. I'm very excited to talk about another one of the Survivor 38 returnees. And it is my pleasure to bring in to us all the way from Australia, the host of so many of our international Survivor wrap-ups. Here is the great Shannon Gates. Shannon, how are you?
I'm great, Rob, and I just want to put it out here at the beginning of the podcast that I trust you. I trust you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm very excited to talk with you today, Shannon, about Mr. David Wright. Is David Wright considered to be a huge deal in Australia?
I mean, I guess as huge a deal as any modern Survivor players are. Like, personally for me, I love David Wright. Definitely one of my absolute favorite contestants. I'm excited because 2 years ago we did a similar podcast about Debbie and Game Changers.
Yes.
But to be honest, I wasn't really a Debbie super fan. I just really wanted to get on the podcast, but I actually really do love David Wright. So
good. Good. Okay. And such similar players to Debbie Wanner and David Wright.
Yeah, I know. I found so many similar things. I hope
both
that he has
DWs.
Slightly better. Yeah. Oh, my God. I didn't even realize that. I hope that he does better than she did. I hope he doesn't yell at like she did at Brad Culpepper. When I was watching that after, like, kind of putting my whole Survivor strategic analysis behind her for Game Changers, I was like, ugh, this is the end of my podcasting career. But I have faith
in
David.
No, it was the start.
Yeah. Yeah, I owe a lot to Debbie. But I have complete faith in David as well. And whatever happens, like, I majorly stand David Wright. He had a similar game, obviously, to you in the Amazon. And then, like, we know what happened to you on the second time. So, like, whatever happens with David, I'm still going to love him.
Okay. All right. So today we're going to talk about the story so far on David Wright. Everything we know about David Wright up until this point. And then eventually we'll get to see what he's thinking going into Survivor 38. But we're going to take a look back at his one time out. He's the only one time player that's coming back here in the Edge of Extinction. Do you think that that will hurt him at all? That he's only played one time. He's only on his second time out there. The other returnees on their third?
I don't think so. I mean, do people remember that Kelly Wentworth played the first time? He made it further than Joey Amazing has ever made it. Aubrey obviously has a lot of Survivor experience under her belt. But, I mean, the game he played was pretty comprehensive. So I think he's got a lot out of Survivor.
Okay, so let's go back to Survivor Millennials versus Gen X. Picture it, 2016, and we were getting ready for the age-old battle of Millennials versus Gen X. Shannon, were you going into this rooting for the Millennials to dunk on the Gen Xers?
Well, for me, the main person I was rooting for was David, and to me, before even there was no first one out, before any of the bios or the preseason cast assessments, I loved David from the Koh Rong finale when we saw him in the preview and the way that he just seemed so anguished. There was some like anguish on his face and I just thought he really cares about this game. So I was completely on board the David train from before minute one. And that's why when he was having this like disastrous first episode that we'll talk about, I was like, yeah, this feels right. Like, obviously, I've dedicated like the last few months to completely being behind David, and now he's going to be the first boot. Otherwise, I've never really identified, I guess, as like a massive millennial, even though I am one, so I wasn't super rooting for the millennials, but yeah, it was all about David. And I will say in his pregame bio, he did call himself similar to Cochrane, obviously, but also merged with one of his Edge of Extinction players. Can you guess who that was?
I am going to guess Aubrey?
Yeah, I knew you would guess that. He actually had only seen a few weeks of Aubrey, but the answer was actually Joey Amazing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
He said he was like Joey Amazing for his puzzle abilities, which didn't really pan out, but also not his hair and his way with the ladies. And it's like, what else is there?
Yeah.
That is Joey Amazing.
The one thing that he and Joey Amazing would have in common is that they both had the uncanny ability to create a fake idol, that they both had that arts and crafts background.
Yeah, I also realized that connection, but I feel like Joey Amazing, because he created the fake idol in his first season, like, it's not hugely remembered, whereas David's fake idol was used on Ghost Island, like, a couple of weeks before these players all went out. So it's definitely going to be top of mind.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's see if there's any other similarities between David Wright and Joey Amazing.
And Debbie,
how is David Wright presented to the audience in his initial appearance in Survivor Millennials versus Gen X?
Well, later in the season, I think Jeff refers to him as a fearful, neurotic oddball. They use a lot of really mean descriptors about him. And I think that he's definitely like the main character of the first episode. There's so many things. Like, he covers his ear when they're chopping bamboo, and he has this look on his face when they put a stick insect on him, and he cries, and he talks about his fear of death. And like, he's just basically shown to be, I guess, just an oddball, you know, like, and without all the strategy that we're going to see come from him, and without the transformation that's going to happen, it's not a really good look, I have to say. But obviously, watching it, knowing what we do, we know that it's like the start of something really brilliant. It seems impossible to me that he gets through the first episode at all. I think I've worked out why, and that makes me feel really confident about him going into 38, because before I went back and rewatched his stuff, I'm like, I don't see how he'll survive. He's such an obvious threat. If anything, he has this like really unfortunate duality of being like a potential liability and being a huge threat, which is like the worst possible combination. But he does make it through the first episode by getting only one vote from Cece. He's not even their secondary split vote plan. It's Rachel and then Cece. So in the end, I actually think that if you look deeper, his first episode in Waves is actually quite impressive.
Yeah, this should be a good thing for David Wright, because no matter what happens to him in the first episode, it would be almost impossible for him to have a worse first 3 days in The Edge of Extinction.
It's so bad. Like, one of the things he also does was that he accuses Paul and Ken of having an idol, and then says that they should like ambush them, and then he really obviously looks for the idol, but he doesn't find it. Like, what is he doing? I was feeling how I felt the first time I watched him, like, please, I've decided to stan you. Can you do a little better? But I think that the key of his first episode, there were two things for me that stood out. Firstly, Chris says that David is paranoid, but also funny and charming. And another thing is that at Tribal Council, every single thing he says, all other 9 players on the tribe and Jeff are laughing at every single thing that he says. So I feel like this is Dave Wright's superpower. Every single time you're like, how is he still in the game? And it happens so many times throughout the season. I think it's just that the players just really like him, which is, I think, one of the most, if not the most important things in Survivor. So going into 38, if David can just have even an ounce of that likability, I think he'll be okay for a while.
What was the main source of the anxiety for David Wright? Was it the game or was it the elements?
I never thought that the game was a massive issue for him, because he's like a chess player and he's a super fan and he was out there for the game. I don't think he felt comfortable being in the elements. I think that a massive thing for him was like the social anxiety of being the odd one out, of not fitting in with the Bretts and the Chris's and the Pauls, you know, and like everyone seemed different from him. And I think he just felt like an outcast. And I do, like, I'm just saying this, but I have no basis for this, but I do think that there was a little bit of that fear of being first boot. Mm-hmm. I think he was really desperate not to be first boot. He seems to get like a little bit of his feet under him after that's gone, which would be a terrifying thing. And I think, you know, before Tribal Council, he says he's his own worst enemy and that he probably will go home. So I think that fear for him was massive. And I don't think now he's proven himself. So going out into another season, I don't know if he'll have that much anxiety because people know what he's about.
Do you think that it was a better thing or a worse thing for David to be on a tribe of all people who are similar to him in age with the Gen Xers?
Well, he does seem to connect a lot better with the millennials, like just in terms of, you know, he has a very young energy. I think he gets along obviously really well with Zeke and Hannah and Adam. And I think that his people are actually a lot more on the millennials. So maybe that mixed tribe will be better. And we have, like, I've said so many bad things he did in this episode. He also like told them he was the puzzle master and then lost them time on the puzzle and then have to switch out. So yeah, I think honestly, it's amazing that he survived this. Like, he and Rachel they both screwed up the challenge and they still chose Rachel. Like, that speaks to how much they liked him. Like, Rachel's mistakes weren't nearly as bad as David's, and she paid for them in a way that David didn't.
Yeah.
So great.
I do feel like that it wasn't great for him to be there with the Gen Xers. Like, I think there might be some people from that tribe that probably, oh, let me get along better with the people that are the same age as me and then know the same references. But yeah, I do think that he is young for his age and does get along better with younger people, because I think that he is not like the traditional person in their 40s that you would imagine as being sort of like a responsible adult. I think he does have a more youthful spirit about him.
I do agree, but I do think that's marginal. Like, I think David Wright's first 3 days of Survivor ever are going to be this paranoid, and he's still going to be scared of Bamboo and like these things. Like, maybe the millennials would react to it in different ways, but I do think that it's mostly on him. Like, he says he's his own worst enemy in this episode. He absolutely is. Like, I can't believe that he accuses other people of having an idol and then is the one to most obviously look for an idol. Like, so many bad things that are really just on him. I don't want to blame the Gen Xers for this.
Okay, so for David Wright to survive that first tribal council that the Gen Xers are going to go to, does he end up pulling out of the nosedive, or does Rachel just do more to get in front of the bus?
I really think it's on him. Like, I think that he, you know, the net negative of what he had done to Rachel was a lot more. I just think that he was just more likable. And when you're thinking, well, it's day three and we have 36 days left or even a few more days on this tribe, I'd rather hang out with Dave, who makes me laugh and is more fun, than Rachel, who's offering, you know, not as much maybe.
Can you talk about the types of people that David was able to bond with early on?
This will be a short section. He really didn't have anyone. He was kind of gravitating to Brett and Chris, but they were just like, who is this guy? Like, Brett LaBelle is way too underserved in Millennials versus Gen X, by the way. But he was
and usually
just so,
he's overserved.
I know. Like, it's actually, it's amazing because Millennials versus Gen X is an incredible season. I understand why you have so many guests from it. And Brett LaBelle's like underedited, especially knowing what we know of him now, because there's just so many massive characters. David obviously is a huge, maybe the main character of the season, which is saying a lot. But yeah, they kind of don't know what to do with him. He's trying to forge a thing with Brett and Chris. He hasn't really connected with Ken yet. That comes in like a couple of episodes. Cece votes for him. That ends up being an ally. Like, he doesn't really have a friend by the time he leaves the first episode.
Okay. Did the cyclone that hit early on, did that do anything to help him calm down, or was that just another thing that made him have anxiety?
No, he said in his deep dive with you that that was like the closest he came to quitting. So I don't think that that was a good thing for him either. Basically, like, as bad a first episode as you can have, like, he makes it look like Stephen Fishback had like an amazing first episode in Cambodia. Like, it could not have been worse. I'm saying this now because it's going to get a lot better very quickly. I think a running theme with David is you look at he's in a terrible position, and then a couple of episodes later, he's at like the top of the pecking order, and you're like, how did that even happen? Like, he's very good at doing that. But I mean, it's crazy to think that, I guess, if he didn't have enough of that innate likability, which is core to who he is, so you can't really separate it. But if they had, you know, taken him out, then would we be thinking of him as like a Zane Knight type character with this horrible first boot arc? Like, that was a possibility. And like, luckily he went on to control most of the season, and he was even, you know, on the right side of the votes here, and he just kind of like adapted into the majority. He's very adaptable that way, just kind of hid with the majority and survived episode two to actually do some damage, which was good.
Now, Shannon, I know he finds the idol early on in Millennials versus Gen X. At what point does he find the idol?
So that's at the beginning of episode two. So it's already getting a lot better for episode two. I really feel like once kind of the heat is off him from being first boot, he, instead of just going looking for the idol, which is what he had done, which was so bad, he actually has an alibi, which is that he's going to find these like big rocks to sit on around the fire, which another massive thing that he does at the beginning of episode two is he's the first Gen Xer to make fire, which is huge and obviously will become a big thing. Fire is now a massive part of the game, and Dave becomes the fire person. So those are two huge things. Like, his story is already growing from basically before the credits of episode two.
Yeah. I didn't know this about David Wright, but this was something that came up in talking with Adam Klein about the final four fire making twist. And I just didn't think of David Wright as somebody who was really good at making the fire, but apparently he is like prolific at being able to make fire with the flint.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what Adam has said and what I agree with, that they made the final four fire making twist for him, much like how they changed the final tribal council for Aubrey and Michelle. So this is like actual Survivor game changes with David and Aubrey. Like, it's actually Survivor rule changes. But yeah, I think with David, you think about him as bad at challenges and you think about him as a liability when, like, later in the game, he's credited as being a jury threat because he's so good around camp and because he helps so much and because he's so good with the fire. Like, no one wants to sit against him in a tie at the final four. So I do think that the game has evolved in favor of David. Because now there's like way more dependence on idols. Obviously he's good at finding idols, and at the fire at final four, like, it's crazy. Later on in the game, they're saying that they don't think there's an idol at six and five. And it's like kind of like a more evergreen time when they didn't know there's an idol at all times, literally all the time. So now there's much more like knowledge and dependence of idol, like right till the final five, and then there's fire. So in terms of how the game's evolved, I think it's evolved in his favor.
One of the things I think that's going to be interesting about this season is that you have a lot of these returning players that know how to find the idol in Kelly and David, who found multiple idols. Did Joe ever find an idol?
I don't think so. I think he was just like the kind of person who would find an idol. I feel like they're like, well, Malcolm found one.
And he had a fake idol. But so that's going to be interesting to watch. What was David's strategy for being able to find these idols?
I think David will go into like any nook and cranny. Like, he did, obviously, he found two. And with Millennials versus Gen X, they used to paint on like coconuts or whatever. So it was a very specific type of way of hiding it. So once he knew the first one, like also Adam finds multiple idols, it was definitely like a good thing to have found the first one. And you, then you had like a massive advantage on finding the other ones. I don't know. I think it's just he can maybe go out there and pretend to be, you know, now he's got knows to make alibis rather than just going out and looking for them. So that's a good episode 2 update. But I think that he's the kind of player who's going to be relentless and looking for them. So I feel good about his chances.
Then once he has an idol in his pocket, how does that change the way that he's approaching the game?
I do think that him having an idol makes him a more confident player. And one thing I want to look at throughout his game is that David Wright is a very anxious person, but I see him as a very, very confident player in the game. He's not a safe player. He's a massive big game player. I mean, he has two idols. He plays neither on himself. And the way that he makes big moves almost at like, you know, he flips a switch and does a different thing, like almost on a whim. He's a very confident player. I think having an idol did help him because he has an idol now until, you know, the final 10. Because he immediately finds the next one. It helps him a lot. It also helps him to make, it's a tool that he can use in the game. So one of the things he immediately does is he bonds with Ken, because Ken is also apparently a social outcast.
Apparently.
Yeah, hearing the apparently, like, back in rewatching Millennials vs. Gen X made me laugh way too hard. Like, this is now how RHAP has changed Survivor for me. Like, now that's what people will look for when they rewatch seasons. So he tells Ken about the idol. He has a really good read that's going to kind of endear Ken to him, basically, until day 38. And that's something he said in his deep dive review, that he hadn't intended on telling people about the idol, but his game is adaptable and that he realized he needed a friend and he used it, you know, to work with Ken there. So I think that, I mean, the beginning of this episode and actually finding an ally, making fire, finding an idol, like, he's already a million times better than he was, which is maybe not saying that much considering where he came from, but he's already improved a lot.
Okay. So we're going to have a couple of votes here for the Gen X tribe before we get to the swap. So how does David figure into these early votes?
So David goes from being on the bottom, no friends, to kind of controlling everything. In the Paul vote, Jeff turns against Paul. And I don't know how much is like her taking action based on a misunderstanding of what Paul said. Or it was kind of, it was credited as Ken and David's move. And definitely, like, they had those relationships with the women to make that move. You know, they're not going to make moves if they have zero relationship with someone like Dave. And I think Ken, I don't think Cece was doing that much. But that, I think that was a big thing for him. But obviously his major move and what he credits as his best move was the final, you know, the vote at 4 where he idols out Lucy. Mm-hmm. 2 votes, just him and Cece. And I know that you didn't like this move at the time, but I actually really love this move from him in hindsight.
Yeah. He might have been ahead of the time here a little bit, because I think it is a good long-term move, even if it's, you know, a riskier short-term move, because you don't necessarily know that you're going to swap the next day.
Well, if they don't swap, he has like changed the game in a really, really good way for him, because it's going to be a final 7. And if he left Lucy in the game, then Lucy, Brett, Chris, and Sunday would, you know, control the other 3 of Ken, Cece, and David. Now he has Jeff, so they have that 4 of 7. So he's good if they don't. And, you know, you don't know if they're going to swap. Like, it's Millennials versus Gen X. It's like 2 big tribes against each other. Maybe like Heroes versus Villains, they kind of want to run it down to the merge. Like, you don't know. And even if they do swap, I think a really big thing with David, his whole MO is that he looks at it like a chess game because he's a chess player. And I think he always says it's not us versus them or tribe versus tribe. It's people I trust versus people you trust. And the entire game, he's just trying to like cultivate this trust with people to use them as basically pieces on the board. So he keeps Jess in the game as a massive player for him, who's going to really, really, you know, be indebted to him, versus taking out Paul in the game, who's never going to work for him. And if anything, like, really doesn't see what he contributes and is going to be coming for him. So I think he just sees it as like taking out a piece for the opposition that's a really important piece and keeping one for him. And if Jess does make it through a swap into the merge, which she does, that's a really, really playable piece for him. And I mean, obviously she does draw rocks for his side and go home. So it does play out that way.
Yeah, it's a big gamble, but he is able to then the next morning, right? He goes out and finds the idol again.
Yeah, and I think you've said, like, if you can just go out and keep finding it, like, perfect strategy. But, like, even if he doesn't find the idol, I think what he's saying is a really trusted ally who's indebted to me is more important to me than an idol. And, like, I don't think that I can argue with that. Like, Modern Survivor might say that's wrong and an idol's the most important thing. But if you have an actual playing person on your side versus, you know, taking out someone who's against you. Like, I do think that that might be more valuable.
It's an interesting question to weigh out, where the idol can save you for one vote, but the ally is like having an extra vote at every tribal council. And if you sort of like had those two objects on the table for you of, okay, what would you rather have? Would you rather have the immunity idol you could take with you or an extra vote at every tribal council? I think you'd probably take the extra vote, no?
Yeah, and it's not just an extra vote, it's potential extra intel or like, you know, extra information, extra help. And it's also, it's an idol plus Paul versus Jeff. So That's also like the negative of having Paul there, who just was like really not vibing David, I don't think. So I like this. And I think that Modern Survivor would be all the better if more people thought like allies were as important, at least, if not more important than idols.
Okay, so Shannon, talk me through David Wright after the swap, because that he finally is going from a good spot to a not so great spot.
Well, yes. At the post-swap, he's now here with Zeke and Michelle and Cece and Chris. And this is like a really bad challenge for him. I think Zeke asked if he's throwing it, but he's not throwing it. He just cannot make it work in this challenge. And Cece's also really bad. And it's this kind of thing again, where you're like, how does David survive this? Because, you know, they want challenge strength, which David and Cece are both issues for that. But then Chris also wants revenge in that David just blindsided him in the last vote. And I will say that people didn't seem very mad at him. Like, they came back from that tribal council just like even more mad at Jessica and not really mad at David. So I think that speaks to a social game. But Chris does kind of want to like get some control back and get some revenge against David and Cece, who just voted against him. And they go for Cece. Like, how is that possible? Like, David's an actual threat. He had an idol. He might have another idol, which he does. Like, I genuinely didn't understand it, but I think it just comes back to the fact that they all like David more than Cece. Like, every single time David is standing there like, how am I alive? Like, he cheats death so many times, it's crazy. Every single time the audience are looking at him like, why are you still here? It's because they just like him more. And it's so hard to translate across the TV screen because it doesn't really make any logical, strategic sense. But it's a thing that's kind, it's intangible and it's out there on the island. Chris would just rather hang out with David, and so would Zeke. So they wrote out Cece. And as I said, the way that he builds his game from these really poor starting points, and then he's kind of in control, you know, he ends up being saved against Cece, and they don't go back to tribal council. But by the time you look at it again, Michelle's on the outs because she's not one of the guys, and Chris and David and Zeke are like really all like getting a good thing going with the three of them, which carries on into the merge. But even from then, he starts bonding with Zeke so much. He shows Zeke his idol. And at a point, I think it would have been Zeke choosing between Chris and David if they'd gone to more tribals after Michelle went. And in the merge, he chooses David. So at a point, David's at the top of the pecking order with Zeke, where he came from barely being scared against Cece. And that's why you cannot give him an inch. The people on 38 should vote him out immediately, but I don't think that they will, because they never do.
Wow. What was the problem in the challenge here earlier? Can David Wright not swim?
Water is his worst element in the challenges. Like, he's got some other good stuff. I mean, he didn't do great with the puzzles. He does end up winning two immunity challenges in balance and then a like obstacle course into a puzzle. So he's got that those two things down. He hates the water. He says in the deep dive that he hadn't really had enough of a chance to practice his swimming before he came out.
And he hates deep dives.
Didn't seem like he was having a fun time. No, those are his favorite types of deep dives, because I think now he will have improved on it. Mm-hmm. I think that that would have been one of the major things he's working on. He did say that he did a podcast with you on Ghost Island like less than a month before he filmed, and he said that he was training for the Spartan race. I don't know if that has any water in it, but he must be in pretty good shape if he's doing that.
Yeah, I know he does a lot of like these tough mudders. I'm not sure if any of these incorporate a swimming element to it, but I would have to think, if this was an area that he struggled, knowing him a little bit, I suspect that he probably, you know, spent some time in the pool before he would go back.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, it's tough to know how much time he knew he had before he knew he was going out. I do think that's the main thing. It's a shame that they're in Fiji again, like not a great location for him. I do think with this challenge, like, he kept losing the buoy. Like, I think that when he gets flustered and like it starts going badly, like it kind of just like rolls like a domino effect and he can't fix it. So if he starts off in a way that's fine and he just carries on. Like, I think a lot of the time it's this post-swap tribe. They use them really sparsely. Like, they go on to win all the other challenges and they use them fine. But it's more just like when one thing goes wrong, he's like, starts getting really scared that he's screwing it up for everyone. And then it kind of gets in his head and it gets way worse. Okay. So I think that might be an issue. It's more like a mental thing.
Anything else about David before we get to the merge?
No, I think that his pre-swap, all in all, like even besides that first episode, is really good. And I think he gets himself into a great position at the merge that he can then use to kind of run the whole post-merge. Yeah. You know, he has a perfect voting record until he gets voted out, true of the pre-swap as well. So, yeah, I think he did pretty well.
Yeah, he's able to ride out the initial storm on his first tribe, and then he rides out the storm again, and he comes into the merge, and he is set up pretty well.
Yeah, he has alliances with a lot of different factions. Now that he's close with Zeke, that brings in Hannah and Adam, and he definitely bonds a lot more with Hannah once he meets her and he tells you that she's like the millennial version of him. But I do think that one issue is that there's a couple of people who still don't trust him, like Sunday, who didn't get to spend any time with him after he used the idol against her faction with the Lucy vote. She still doesn't trust him. They're still like fixated on Jessica over him, but there is still maybe that lack of trust. That might be one of the negatives of using an idol in that way, in that you alienate some people. But David also said that a reason that he likes that is that you play the idol, and then if they were worried he had an idol, that takes some of that away. They don't know that he's going to go find one like exactly the next day. So I think that his threat level, like, it fluctuates here through things like that, but at a point it's going to become so extreme that there's like really nothing that he can do about it. But yeah, at the merge he's in a pretty good spot.
Shannon, does David give any insight into how he sees the game differently at the merge versus the pre-merge?
I think the biggest thing that he says at the merge is that he's like a really big proponent on it being a really fluid game. And again, like using those players he trusts as pieces, like it would be ridiculous for him to say that in the beginning of the game because he basically like wasn't doing well enough to even have a plan. Like he just had to survive. And I think now that he has his feet under him and he has more confidence, he can actually go ahead and actually make moves without thinking that he just has to survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really love that idea of people I trust versus people I don't trust.
Yeah, and he says that a lot. Like, I feel like that was one of his like major things that he might have coined. I also think he coined live tribal, so that's like a big thing. He's a massive game changer.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. The first couple of votes end up being a couple of millennials that don't really have ties to David or to anybody in particular. Does this benefit him?
Well, he's the one who throws out Michelle's name and she goes first. So this is the kind of confidence he has that he's like throwing out names and people are going with it, which is great. And I think that the fact that this massive, like nerdy millennials and Gen X group are able to come together, it's all kind of based on this Chris, David, Zeke thing that they've made and like their people all coming together. So he's a huge part of that. And I think that 13 person merge is huge. Getting rid of a few people that Michelle, he never felt great about her. Taylor, he'd never worked with before. And hadn't spent any time with. So like these are the perfect people to kind of whittle it down to a manageable number of people.
Okay. From what I recall, I feel like that the initial battles at the merge end up being framed more as Zeke versus Chris. Is that right?
Well, if anything, I think that it was David / Jessica versus Chris's faction with Zeke kind of in the middle. So at the final 11, when this is happening, when all those, like when the couple of millennials go first, it very much is like at the exact same time, David's like, I think we have to deal with the whole Chris issue at the same time that Chris is like, we have to take out Jessica. So it becomes this war where these three power players of Chris, Zeke and David are kind of all against each other and fighting for Zeke's power. And Zeke there, he does, you know, he goes with David. And I think it's also a running theme where, you know, he says he's going to come up to David soon, but David tends to win people over to his side quite a lot, like in ways that it is crazy, like winning people over his side, you know, where they choose him over day one allies. And I do think that it speaks to that bond that he creates, the way he endears himself to people, that likability. It's a massive vote, obviously, that he stays in control by winning Zeke's faction, which is like Zeke, Hannah, and Will, over to his side to vote out Chris.
Okay. Who are the key allies at this point for David Wright?
Well, Ken continues to be a huge ally. And I have to say with Ken and David is that I don't think David gets enough credit for managing Ken. You know, like you get credit for managing Mateo. Tony gets credit for managing Wu. Like Ken is not a good survivor player. And David has to put out a lot of fires. You know, at the final four vote with Jessica and with Lucy, Ken's doing some some crazy stuff. Later, he tests Will, and David's like dealing with these headaches all the time. So while Chris is a great loyal ally for him, he also brings his own fair share of problems. Jessica is still super loyal to him. And then once he breaks off from Chris and Sunday and Brett, who he was working with, I think that Zeke and Adam become really key to him as well. So, yeah, I mean, he does really well here at the final 11, but at this point, it's when his threat level is becoming, like, almost unmanageable. It's crazy that he survives the final 4 when he's a huge threat at 11. This is when he offers to sit out of the reward because he doesn't want to do the water challenge and he doesn't want to, like, bring his team down. And everyone tells him not to, and then he does lose the reward. Actually, not even in the water. He loses it at the puzzle. So, like, but then he goes on and wins immunity. So at this point, like, his story is so obviously inspirational that it's already a jury threat. And that's going to become, like, an increasing problem for him down the merge.
Okay. So talk to me about how we get into this big tie vote here in Millennials versus Gen X and where David factored into that.
So David was kind of the head of the snake against Zeke. You know, Zeke decides after the Chris vote that he's going to immediately turn against David. And he goes to Sunday and Brett and, like, picks them up as new allies now that they don't have Chris to come against David. David goes to Brett and Sunday hours later. Like, Zeke goes the night of tribal council and Zeke goes, like, at sunrise the next morning. And David goes at sunrise the next morning. And it's too late at that point. They have chosen Zeke. And I do think that loss of allies, whether it's based on he was too late or whether Zeke was just more likable to Brett, like they had their own drinking buddy connection, that is probably the biggest flaw in his game this whole time, because he really does lose that battle to Zeke of those allies. And another thing is that he does tell Brett and Sunday that Zeke's the biggest threat in the game and he basically needs to be dealt with at some point. So that's not great, because that was a bad read. I think that's his worst read in the game. And they end up telling Zeke that he's coming for them. And obviously Zeke knows that David has an idol. So now all this information he's given out to kind of get trust is coming up against each other. Secrets are getting out. And it kind of looks like it's, like, really not in a good place for him. But the main factor here that saves him is Hannah. His relationship with Hannah becomes so key. Basically, through the rest of the merge, he survives because he has two people in Ken and Hannah who just do not want to see even him possibly going home. And Hannah has to choose between her day one ally and Zeke and David, who she only met at the merge, and she chooses David. And she has social reasons. Like, she says Zeke's condescending, and she wants to play this game with David just, like, in a very social, human way. And I do think that that's what ends up getting him the numbers here, where he can at least tie the vote. And that's huge for him. Obviously, they lose that rock draw and one of his people draws the rock and goes home. But at the same way, at least he had enough allies to get him to that point.
So after the rock draw, then his side is in a bad spot that they're down 5-4 after that vote. How does he avoid being the next person to go home? And not only that the person who does go home is the person who was his biggest rival in Zeke.
Yeah, I will say before we get there, just at the rock draw, another thing that he does is he plays his idol and he goes up to play it for himself to try and, I guess, save himself and also, you know, maybe to not have to draw a rock. And then he overhears that Adam says, oh, they said they were going to vote for Ken. So he switches it on a whim to Ken and then he ends up drawing a rock. And like he is not an anxious player. Like anyone who will A, draw a rock and B, you know, switch who they're playing their idol for on a complete 1 second turnaround is a very big game, confident player, I think. But in terms of the final 9, this is the first time he's in the minority basically since like the first couple of days. Not through any fault of his own other than the fact that they lost the rock draw, 50-50 chance there. And I thought this was really funny. So he knows that Will is trying to get points on his resume. And at this point he says to Will, you know, I know I'm a target, but just use me for this vote. And Will's like, I'm done with using people. I want to work with people. And David's like, oh, okay, great. Even better. So he starts to work with Will. He's very good at also putting other threats out in front of him. It's like Zeke is such a huge threat, but like David's obviously a massive threat, but even people like Brett and Jay, he's very good at talking up why they're a bigger threat than him. And then, you know, obviously Will, even with all the interference from Ken, decides to go with that and does decide that Zeke is the biggest threat. Where I don't know if Zeke is the biggest threat. Like, I think David's as big a threat based on what he's accomplished in the game, and he still is able to do that, which, I mean, you can put it down to Will or you can put it down to David's side. David definitely looked like he was the one kind of, like, leading that charge, and Will, he's the first person we see Will approach about that plan. But I do think, like, it has to come down again to his maneuverability and social relationships.
Who do you give the most credit to for getting Zeke out of the game at that point?
Will's the one who makes the move, but he doesn't get any benefit from it in that he goes home next. I would have to say probably David, in that A, he manages Ken and he brings it back. But the other thing is that, like, David and Zeke have so transparently gone against each other that anytime Zeke's going to leave the game, like, you have to credit it to David. And David's obviously the other possible target because he's the other biggest threat. So if he is able to save himself and survive, like, I feel that that should be credited to him.
Okay. All right. So now with Zeke out of the game, how does David avoid the rest of the players now viewing him as the biggest threat?
So at this point, Adam starts feeling like this is the time they should probably turn on David. So he's lost like that ally as well. They do take out Will. You know, he's very good at validating Will's move after the game and like after that move and giving him that credit. But then again, painting him as a massive threat, like as if Will is a bigger threat than David. I think that what gets him through these many votes to like the astonishment of David himself, as well as some other players like Brett and Adam, is that relationship with Ken and Hannah. Like this is now getting to like the final 8 and 7. If you have you and two other players who will not possibly see you go, like they don't even want David to be like the secondary split vote target. That's so beneficial to your game. He also has obvious like other threats in front of him, like Jay, for example, but at a point where they're like, Sunday is more threatening. We have to get rid of Sunday over Jay. Like, that's the extent of the loyalty. Hannah has so many excuses for why she can't go after David every time, but it's like, you just don't want to. Like, that's all that it is. You just like him. And none of those excuses really make sense other than the fact that she just wants to spend the time with him. One quote that she has when she's voting for Sunday is she says, voting for Sunday is a problem because it leaves a visible threat in the game, which is David. But if Jay plays an idol and David goes home, I lose someone I freaking love, so I don't know the right choice. So that's the point in the game where the audience is saying, how can you possibly have that as a choice? Like, you'll see David in a few days. Like, it's just a game. He's going to go to Ponderosa and then you can be friends forever. But she doesn't want to lose that time with him. She doesn't want to lose him as a friend and ally in the game over Sunday. And I think a lot of people see that as like Hannah's game losing move, where she takes out someone she possibly could have beaten in the end. People make game losing moves for David quite often until the final four. So I think that's what's taking him through these last few votes in the game.
Can you discuss David creating the fake idol for Jay?
Yeah, I don't feel like this was anything. Like, I feel like with most fake idols, including this one, there was no reason for it. It was something David said in the pregame he really wanted to do. It's something that's going to make him, I think, a massive target in 38 because it was just used in Ghost Island. Also, it was so well done. It was like meticulously planned. He painted it. He did it in the dead of night. I still don't know how. He used a note, and I need a fact check on whether he's the first person to think to put the note with the fake idol, because I feel like that's really revolutionized the game. I can't think of another person who's done this before him. I still feel like it really didn't do anything, especially because he didn't really seem to think there was another idol in the game. And this is a really, really unfortunate thing to happen for David, because Adam does end up finding the idol, which I'll talk about, I think, is why he lost the game. But I don't think he's like worried that Jay's going to go out and find the idol, because he didn't think there was an idol. I think he was just like, this will be fun. And Jay is the perfect person to use it on, because he's like too goofy to be mad. David's not going to lose a jury vote anyway. But I do think it was just like David having fun with his last few days on Survivor. And that's the point of confidence he's come to as well.
Yeah, because I think that this move ends up, looming large in the David versus Goliath season, not David Wright versus Goliath season, where Nick Wilson, I think that that's his idea, where he's trying to at least make people think that he just found the idol. So don't go out there and go look for the idol, everybody. And I think that Angelina, to some degree, I think, was also thinking about this scenario of, getting a Jay to play a fake idol, ended up being something that looked good for David when she's trying to get Allison to play the fake idol. So I do think that this ends up being a move that I don't know if the jury saw it that way, but I feel like for the viewers, I feel like that it ends up being something that he gets a lot of credit for.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't, claim it. Even when Jay uses it, he's not like Bing or anything like that. Like, he literally just like sits there. But I don't think he needed anything to add to his resume. I don't think that this was something that was really going to affect the game. I think he was just like, I'll cause chaos, and like the status quo is like kind of catching up with me. So it's good to just kind of jumble things around. But I also just think, like, he said he would say it. He said he would do it in the pregame. So he's like, well, it's like day 36, like might as well live out all my survivor dreams.
Yeah.
I don't think that there was like a massive reason for it. I do think that, yeah, it's one of the things I think, because I think the problem with David is that he looks so obviously sneaky. And this is one of those things people will remember. Like, even if you're a casual fan and you're out there playing with him, you're going to be like, you made that amazing fake idol and you made the paint and all these things. Like, I think it's worrying for his reputation. But I do think it was just like a fun thing to do. In terms of him not thinking there were any idols left, I don't think this is a mistake that he's going to make again. Because again, there are idols at all times. Like every single time you're on Modern Survivor and you're saying, I don't think they've rehidden an idol. You are wrong. Like that's just like an objective statement at this point. But I think that it's interesting because I looked at it like, should he have kept Jay around? You know, like Tony takes Spencer to Final Four. That's risky. But, you know, possibly he talks about even if he'd gone to the end with Jay, they might have tied. They were like, what will happen in a tie? And if he was sitting next to Jay and Ken, that's a win for him. But that's a difficult thing to do, to be like, I'll win in the tie with Jay, when they don't know how ties work. But I do think that he didn't need to keep around Jay as a threat, because he had Brett as a really obvious jury threat. And in a world where Adam doesn't find the idol at 5, Adam goes home at 5, and Brett is there at Final Four. And I don't think that Ken turns on David to keep Brett in the game, because I don't think he has enough of a relationship with Brett, and that seems important to Ken. And also because Brett is a legitimate jury threat. So I do think that the way that he loses the game is that Adam does find the idol here at Final Five.
So I want to touch on the immunity challenge at 6, which David goes on to win, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he wins it under some unusual circumstances where that, correct me if I'm wrong, that there is a puzzle or some sort of a math problem that needs to be done, and Jay solves it first, but then David cheats off of what Jay has as his answer because he doesn't cover it. Do I have that right?
Yeah, so it's like a lock combination code, which are my pet peeves in Survivor, because literally, why are these things? Like, you have numbers and then you put into a lock combination, and it's just luck if you happen to get in the right order. Like, this is me on my soapbox. I really hate these types of challenges. Mm-hmm. But then Jay has the ability to cover it when he goes and runs on to do the puzzle, and he doesn't. And David is the first person to run there and look at it, at which point everyone does. But again, I'm like, this is right at the end of the game. And I feel like going into another season, if anyone remembers that, that's not great for his reputation because it looks super sneaky. But also, he didn't cover it, so why wouldn't you go look?
So he gets to go to dinner, and it's a reward also with the immunity. And so that they have a dinner there, and he brings, is it Jay and Adam that he goes and takes to the final 6?
So Jay has the reward steal advantage that Adam has given him. Mm-hmm. So he steals David's reward, which was like the best possible scenario.
Okay.
Like, now David doesn't have to choose to go, who to choose to come on with him to the reward. And he wins immunity. And then Jay still takes David because he's like, well, you won, so I don't play like that. And then he takes Adam. So yes. Yeah, perfect thing for him that he doesn't have to piss anyone off, and he still gets to go on the reward and he wins immunity.
And Jay floats a deal that, hey, could this be the final 3? Am I remembering this all correctly?
Yes. And on the show, I think it makes it look like David's really amenable to it, and Adam's the one who's going against it. But he does say, I think, in his exit interview with you that he wasn't really thinking about it. I mean, that is super risky. At this point, Jay has flushed his idol. He knows that Jay doesn't have a real one because he has the fake one. And I don't think he's going to go with that. I think that he would have been more amenable to taking Jay through as a shield if he didn't have the shield of Brett. I would have loved to see it, because knowing what happens and how Adam finds the idol, you know, obviously it might have been a way for him to win, but I don't really begrudge him not taking like a massive, massive threat down to Final 5 and someone who can win immunities as well.
Do you think that after this whole experience, especially with the Final 4 fire making being a thing now, do you think that David is more likely to try to take a threat like Jay further into the game?
I think he might have felt burnt by not taking Jay. I mean, I think he says to you, it's like, well, anything would have been better because like I didn't win. But I do think that it's not really the right analysis, because I think that without the idol, and you can't really plan for that, he does have the shield of Brett. So he doesn't need to take like 2 shields of Brett and Jay down to the Final 5. That seems like a lot. I don't know. I think that the problem for David more is that he might be targeted earlier because people are going to be scared of him in the fire and scared of him in idols if that's like seeped enough by 38.
I don't think that many people know that he's good at making the fire, unless he's showing that skill set off. I don't think that many people know that.
The problem is that I think people think of him as more of a liability than he is. I think he's better physically than people remember. And I think that people don't realize he's such a help around camp. So he's going to have to go out there in 38 and prove himself, especially early, as someone who's played the game before, who can help them with survival stuff like the fire, which he can do probably much better than any newbie. And he's kind of going to have to show his cards there to save him maybe early in the game. And then obviously it might come back to bite him later.
Okay. Talk to me about David's end game and if you see a spot where he really went wrong.
Well, firstly, I thought it was funny that Adam says to David that he's now become a physical threat. So that's the point we've got to with David, right? That he's now a physical threat.
What a journey. What a ride.
I hadn't even remembered that he won two immunities. And like two immunities that are massive formats for Modern Survivor, like balance and an obstacle course into a puzzle. Like if he can win immunity in that, I mean, he could win any challenge. So I feel really confident about that. But Hannah has so many excuses for not taking out David at the final five as well. She says that she like that Brett was too big a threat and that she didn't want to anger Ken or anything, where she could have just not told David that Adam had an idol and they would have voted for Adam and the votes would have bounced back and David would have gone home. She didn't even need to vote for David. So I think at that point it's becoming really, really clear how much they just really didn't want to turn on David. But Brett kind of ruins everything for David when he leaves and he kind of chastises Hannah and he congratulates David for winning. And it's at this point that Hannah realizes she has to turn on him. And I don't really believe it was before then, because she had her chance. He could have been idled out. So she has stuck with him until now, but now she's turned on him and it's all going to come down. And he knows that Hannah's not with him. And it's all going to come down to whether Ken will stay with him. And David feels very confident in this. And there were things that I was condemning, like, okay, well, don't leave Ken and Hannah alone. But I think he was trying to have a really deft touch with Ken, which was just like, I don't even need to make a pitch to you. I don't, you know, need to follow you around or anything. Like, I just trust you. And it's like, it's funny how the I trust you has really evolved as well, like from the aggressive I trust you that he was giving to everyone in episode one to now just like really trying to appeal to Ken. And I think that Ken really does have this huge moral dilemma, but like credit to Hannah, who is absolutely not credited by the jury, credit to Hannah that she does manage to get Ken to see the light at that point at the final four, which is, it would have been ultimately crazy if Ken had stuck with him then, and he doesn't. But yeah, as Dave says, when he gets voted out, he was so close.
Do you feel like that he misplayed handling Ken at the final four?
I don't know what else he could have done, because I think that Ken might be a little bit, not volatile, but maybe emotional. So at the point where David's making like a really hard pitch or not letting him speak to anyone else, I don't think that Ken would have liked that very much. So what can he do other than to just, you know, he mentioned loyalty and integrity like more times than coach. He said all these things that he thought, you know, Ken would appreciate. And I do think that it's insane to me that it took Ken this long. So I don't think that I can knock it, because I don't like, I think that it's a credit to him that Ken stayed loyal till the afternoon of day 38. He even tries to like turn Adam and Hannah against each other, which I thought was funny. Like he'll try every angle. He says to Adam, he's like, Ken's not turning on me. So I guess you and Hannah have to go up against each other. And Adam's like, I'm absolutely not doing that. Like I would rather go home tonight than have you stay in the game with me. And then I'll just lose it at final tribal council. So yeah, I think the only thing that went really wrong with his game, he says he did look for idols at the end game, but I think just not, I think, yeah, Adam finding the idol, like basically he was idled out. Like that was his loss. Cause I think that if Brett's there at the final four, they definitely take him out. And then he's in the final three with Ken and Hannah.
Did you feel like going back and watching this, that if David got to the end against Adam, even would he have won the game?
Yes, 100%. Like even he still has the whole jury laughing. He's such an obvious jury threat. And at the point, you know, once he's just putting all his trust in Ken, he's talking up his own game. He's kind of being a bit arrogant. And when Adam's talking up his game, he's like supporting that. So at that point, it's all about the trust for Ken. He's not trying to downplay his game in any way, because that's not going to be the reason that Ken makes his decision. You know, he's not going to say, I think I can beat David. It's either going to be like, I am going to day 39 with my day one ally, or I'm not. So I think that, yeah, Adam knew he would have stood no shot against David. In the final four tribal council, he's literally talking about how much of a better game David played than him. And as we said, Jay and David seem to think it would be about a tie. So, I mean, that's a huge jury threat in Jay. I think he would have had a good shot against pretty much anyone.
Okay, so he comes out of Millennials versus Gen X as that he has, you know, a little bit of swagger as, you know, hey, I came into this game as a guy who was, you know, super nervous and I played this great game and you guys are knocking me out of Final Four because I played the best game, perhaps, of this entire group. But Shannon, now we fast forward a couple of years to the edge of extinction, the David Wright that we expect to see in Survivor 38, do you think is the reset button pushed and he is sort of back to around the same spot that he was on the first day of Millennials versus Gen X? Or do you think that he emerges as this David Wright who seems to have figured things out?
I think that he could never go back to being that day one David Wright. I hope so. Because, you know, he's proven to himself now that he can do it. I do think that he said in his deep dive with you that he's like put his work into self-improvement and therapy after the season as well. So I think that he'll have some of the confidence. I don't think he's ever going to be like an extremely confident person. As I've said, I think he's a very confident player. I don't think he's going to have that anxiety because even now, if he's taken out early, he can be like, well, I was a huge threat, rather than it being like, well, I was a disaster. And I think that, you know, knowing that will give him some confidence. There was some interesting stuff in his, you know, some of his interviews after the show. One of the things I thought was really funny was that he said that Survivor has never jumped the shark in the Game Changes podcast, and he said it never will. So
he might have jinxed us. Happy to hear that.
And yeah, he's like, David Wright, he's so complimentary about every single person he talks about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether from his season in the deep dives or in all the other podcasts, he's like, yeah, I'm really loving Game Changes. I'm really loving Ghost Island. It's like, what is your actual opinion? This cannot be true. And another thing I thought was really funny was that you compared him so much to Dr. Mike, like a lot.
Did I talk to him during Survivor 35?
Yeah, during HHH, yeah. So he's like, I really see a lot of myself in Dr. Mike. And this was like this ongoing comparison of David Wright to Dr. Mike. I just do not see it. I have to say, I don't see it.
Okay, I could get that. Yeah. I don't know if they have too many similarities. I'm not sure exactly what I was going for at that point in time. How are you expecting David to do in this season? But now based that you've gone back and really looked at everything that he's done before, are you expecting big things from him the second time around?
I feel a lot better about it now that I've rewatched his stuff and re-listened to his content on RHAP. I think he could make the merge. Like, I think that he's going to surprise people because he surprised us the whole of Millennials versus Gen X. I think I forgot. Like, I remember being shocked that he made it through the first episode, but I think I forgot how shocking it was that he continued on through the, you know, post-swap, through the merge as well. So now that I'm, like, underestimating him, I feel good about it because I think he's maybe one of the most players ever who has completely exceeded those expectations in his original season. I did write out, like, his strengths versus his weaknesses, and I had, obviously, like, a much longer list for strengths. Things he can use. So he has to play the loyalty card. He played two idols for allies, none for himself. He pulled a rock for an ally. His main ally and other allies made it to the final three and he stuck with his core group. So if I was David Wright, like, I'd be reminding people of that rather than like the fake idol and going to look at, you know, Jay's numbers during the challenge, and that he was really a very loyal guy, and hopefully people will recognize that.
What do you see as the biggest problem for him potentially coming into season 38?
I do think that he has that unfortunate duality of being a really big threat and a potential liability.
Holy crap.
Yeah, I think that he's gonna, like, I don't think he is a liability as much, but I think people will remember that those, like, particularly bad challenges and not feel great about that. But yeah, as a threat, he's a strategic threat, a social threat, a jury threat, and an idol threat. And he's also, like, aesthetically just, like, really sneaky, like, just looks sneaky. I think what I wanted, because obviously a lot of people are really sneaky in their first season and come out and suffer for it, present company included. And the one person who managed to avoid that was Suri, who completely dominated Panama and then came back in Micronesia and really wasn't targeted for it. I think because her narrative was very much she got up off the couch rather than being like, and she dominated the game.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously David has that kind of like battle of, do you remember how great his story was and how, you know, inspirational he was? Or do you remember that he dominated the whole game and was in the majority, like, you know, besides the rock draw, he voted out the person correctly every single time until he went home. And I think, unfortunately for him, like, he just seems so much like a strategist that I think that might win out. You know, he could come out like, remember, I was super anxious and now I'm not. And they'll be like, yeah, but didn't you also do all these really cool strategic things in a way that three was able to hide. I don't think he'll have that. And that's concerning for me. But I am glad that this cast didn't see David versus Goliath and didn't see Christian, because I think that put that really threatening archetype kind of like back front of mind, which wouldn't have been good for him. So that's great as well. But I think that if he makes it, it'll just be based on the fact that he ingratiates himself really well again. People just want to hang out with him again. And that's going to be the thing that saves him time and time again. That's the thing he needs more than anything.
Okay. And then what about in regards to the other returning players? Do you see anything that you feel like that would make him either bond or have friction with the other three returnees?
Well, as we said, he's very similar to Joey Amazing. So yes. I don't know if Joey Amazing is going to be as Ken. I don't think I see it.
Mm-hmm.
He played the RHAP match game with Aubrey. So I was kind of trying to work out maybe if they were on the same page with Match. Mm-hmm. And they were both very bad at Match. So maybe... Yeah. He was not good. Really, really bad.
So you
at
feel
it.
Like that the fact that they're both bad at it could be a match.
Yeah, maybe. What? But also I wonder, like, how close friends is he with Aubrey? Because Aubrey moved to LA. They have like Zeke in common as a friend, I think. So they might have an actual real life friendship.
Yeah, interesting. That Aubrey is also compared to Hannah, as you know, a lot of times Hannah was described as new Aubrey. David got along so famously well with Hannah. It'll be interesting to see if they can end up knowing Hannah and Aubrey both a little bit, that there are differences there. But I wonder if they could find the similarities to be able to be on the same wavelength.
Yeah, I think they'll definitely get along, but I do think Aubrey might be a little bit more lethal, that she's like not going to let David get to the final four in a way that obviously Hannah did.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, obviously if I'm looking at potential connections on the board for him, Aubrey's like the main one.
Yeah. Do you see any sort of common denominator with the type of people that don't get along with David?
Pretty much everyone got along with him. I think that if there's like some big pull, like alpha male who just sees him as weak, rather than realizing that he does the most around camp and is actually like not weak at all, I think that maybe those people just won't see eye to eye with him. But for the most part, like very, very different types of characters in Millennials versus Gen X all got on with him, you know, from your Chris's and Brett's to your, even like Lucy was trusting him at a point, and Jessica and Ken and the Millennials as well. So I think that, you know, it's tough not to get on with David Wright. I think that's his biggest skill in the game, is that I can't imagine someone coming out there and not liking him, because I don't think I saw that for his entire original season.
Shannon, can you make a prediction for David Wright?
Ugh, I don't. For the record, I was completely right about my prediction for Debbie. And
what did you predict? What is it, like a 10th place?
I said that she would go out in the same spot, and she literally did.
Okay, how do you feel about David Wright?
I think he'll be gone early merge. I think that he'll be able to evade them for long enough, but at a point he'll be too threatening.
Yeah. Be interesting to see how he's going to be able to manage the threat level this second time out. Shannon, thank you so much that you were so well prepared, that I really appreciate you going through and listening to the podcast as well. That really a great work here.
Yeah, some things are really funny in hindsight, like knowing he was going out to play, you know, literally 3 weeks after you were talking to him for the Ghost Island. You're like, what do you have going on? He's like, I don't really have a lot going on. I'm like, you liar, stop it.
Yeah, he came in and did the know-it-alls late in the season in Survivor Ghost Island. I believe it was also the very night that they had his idol, was one of the advantages that Dominic found.
Yeah, so as I'm saying, super threatening. But I have to say, like, look how far he's come. In the first episode, he was playing kind of like Steven in Steven's first episode on his returning season. Hopefully it doesn't go that way. And at this point, he's like doing live know-it-alls in front of all the super fans. Like, what incredible confidence. I'm just so proud of David Wright.
Okay. Of course, you can follow the great Shannon Gates on social media at Shannon Gates. Shannon, anything else that you have going on these days?
Much like David Wright said to you in his podcast right before we went out on the island, I don't really know. But I'm actually not going out on Survivor. I just don't have much going on.
What's coming up on the international Survivor front? This is the downtime?
Well, Survivor New Zealand was rested. Mm-hmm. So that's done for 2019. Please hashtag SurvivorNZ 2020. Save SurvivorNZ. Survivor South Africa is coming back. I think they're filming now, so right around May. And for anyone who hasn't checked out those seasons, let me know. Slide into my DMs. I will help you out. They're so good. And the Australian Survivor's coming back with the exact same theme, champions versus contenders. So we're very creative here down under.
Oh, maybe Survivor 39 will be the edge of extinction, too. They'll follow the Australian Survivor model.
Why will you put that onto the universe? But I will say, also, Mike Bloom, Liana Boris, and I recently did kind of like a Survivor 2018 year in review.
Yes.
So we did a bit of a deep dive on David versus Goliath, Ghost Island, Survivor South Africa, New Zealand, and Australia, and kind of ranked all the players, and it went for 3 hours, and it was a lot of names. And yeah, if you have watched those seasons or want to watch them, you can listen to that podcast.
You ranked all of the players that played in a Survivor season in 2018?
Well, we did like our top 10s, but then we ended up talking about like 30 players more probably. And then we talked about who were the best characters. And I feel like I'm not advertising this really well. It really was a lot of fun. We ranked the seasons. We talked about the best moments. We did superlatives across these 5 seasons. So yeah, it was a lot. And definitely something you guys can check out if you enjoyed 2018 Survivor.
Did you rank Steer Burgers versus Bula Burgers?
There is no ranking. Steer Burgers is first. We wouldn't insult Steer Burgers by even putting up the comparison.
All right, Shannon, thank you so much. Really great work today, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me, Rob. Bye.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Shannon Gates telling us all about what's going on so far with David Wright. Had a lot of fun going through everything. Hope you guys did too. Next up this week, we are going to hear all about the story so far about Aubrey Baracco coming up later on this week as we continue our deep dives into the Survivor 38 preseason with much more Survivor 38 content coming up shortly. Of course, I want to take a moment, thank our patrons of Rob's podcast who make this all possible to be able to spend so much time talking about Survivor here in the weeks leading up to Survivor 38. To find out more about the benefits of becoming a Rob's Podcast patron, be part of our Rob's Podcast patron community, check out robiswebsite.com/patron. Hope you guys enjoyed this one. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.